Today on Movie World, as we talk about A Star Is Born, The Sisters Brothers, and Bad Times at the El Royale. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, dear as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. So, this is the second of our kind of back-to-back podcast recordings, and I'm really excited to talk about all three of these movies with you because
yes.
I think... I don't know. I'm equally excited about all three, actually.
I'm excited about two out of the three.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not excited about one of them.
I think I can guess which one, but
we'll
oh, go on. Try.
No, let's get this.
Okay, I'm going to write it down.
Yeah, write it down.
Can this not be on the honor code? I'm not going to switch on you. Like,
I'm
you
writing it down.
You know me well.
But
I've written it down.
Yeah, it's Yeah, we just kind of rushed through, I think, the previous podcast.
Just to get to this one, yeah.
So this one might be a little longer, knowing the three of us. Anyhow.
Plus, we all saw all three movies.
Right.
That's also true, yeah. Yes. So, once again, we're not going to be able to do our usual pick of Netflix movies. I can't find anything to watch on Netflix. But we will come back to that at a podcast in the future, not too distant future. So, honestly, as much as I love Netflix and online streaming, there's plenty in the theaters right now. Like, go see them instead. I mean, go out. Why are you at home watching Netflix? You know, support your movie theaters. So, let's get into our reviews. Three movies, A Star Is Born, The Sisters Brothers, and Bad Times at the El Royale. So I think we are going to tackle them in that order.
Yes.
So let's start with A Star Is Born.
Okay,
and
I have the
Rashmi, you're going to tell us?
I do. So in this new take on the tragic love story, Bradley Cooper plays seasoned musician Jackson Maine, who discovers and falls in love with struggling artist Ali, who's played by Lady Gaga. So this is directed by Bradley Cooper, and it's written by Will Fetters, Eric Roth, and Bradley Cooper. And it stars Lady Gaga, Bradley Cooper, Dave Chappelle, Sam Elliott, amongst a whole host of others. And were we at the cinema when someone was telling us the story? Or yes, you were telling us that originally Clint Eastwood had the script and he was supposed to put Beyonce in it, and then pulled out.
He had the rights to the next remake of the movie. And remember, there was a time when Clint Eastwood was directing a movie every year.
Yeah.
And I don't know what happened. He's kind of stopped in the last couple of years. But this was the next movie he was going to make. And then I think everything was done. And then I think Beyonce got pregnant with the first child. And then the second child never came to be. And then lo and behold, Bradley Cooper took this on as his directorial debut.
Which is a very brave thing to do for a debut
and
director.
And I believe this is the fourth remake of this movie.
At least the third.
I think, yeah, Judy Garland.
And then there was a Gloria Barbara
Streisand.
Oh, there's four. Yeah,
there is four.
Gloria Gaynor originally, then Judy Garland, then Barbara Streisand, and now Gaga.
So, Yazdi, why don't you start us off?
So I'm there's so much I want to say about this. I'm convinced, we watch a lot of movies, and I'm convinced that the single biggest enemy of your movie watching experience is expectation.
Yes.
And so, you know, this movie was getting just, you know, stratospheric good reviews coming out of the film festivals, and everybody was like, I literally couldn't find one bad review. Everybody was like, oh my God.
It debuted at Toronto, I think, right? Or maybe.
Or Venice, one of those, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Lines for it. I mean, we walked past the theater where A Star Is Born was playing at Toronto, and the lines were ridiculous, like 3 hours before.
Correct.
The show started even.
Well, Bradley Cooper and Gaga are two huge
stars,
but carry on. Yeah, sorry.
So I kind of was watching this. My experience, it's going to sound weird. My experience with watching this movie was very similar to what I had when I was watching Gravity, which is I had such high expectations that I was like, I was waiting for it to take off. And I was like, come on, take off. Come on, wow me. Come on, shake me to my core. And I pretty much watched the whole movie in that state, which is really unfair to a movie, I think, because I think what Bradley Cooper is going for, it's a very old-fashioned kind of melodramatic, beautifully put together film, visually great-looking film. But he is going for a lighter touch. He's trying to be more subtle than melodramatic. And I think the movie probably is never intended to completely take off. So it was a very sterile experience for me, to the extent that I almost came out of it like irritated that, you know, what's the big deal about this movie? But I was kind of like, you know, people should stop the whole, you know, oh, it's Bradley Cooper making his first movie and now he's God. And, you know, people were saying like it's one of the best movies ever made and that kind of stuff. So I was very
resentful. And the Can Lady Gaga act question that keeps coming up. Correct. Is also the
well,
one that...
wasn't now, now we should mention that we watched this. There was a special screening of this movie mm-hmm. along with the, like the American,
San Diego
Cinema Society, right. Which is a great organization if anyone is locally interested in being in a film club. But they did a nice introduction. I think the question he says can Bradley Cooper direct? Can Bradley Cooper sing? Can Lady Gaga act? And right, I can't remember the fourth question. Okay, there was only three.
Yeah.
But so go on. Sorry, Joe.
Oh, it was me.
Oh, sorry. Yes, Dee.
Well interrupted there, yes.
No, that's fine. So...
But can he sing?
So I think he can direct. There's no question about it. I have something to say about whether Lady Gaga can act. And we can all talk about that. And I think she's going to, you know, get a nomination for sure. It's in the bag. But I have my opinions on that. But the funniest thing happened is annoyed and irritated I was with the movie that it didn't live up to my, you know, unreasonably high expectations. It's kind of stuck with me. And I cannot seem to kind of, I thought it would be forgettable, but it hasn't been. It's kind of stuck with me. I've been thinking about, you know, pieces of it, portions of it coming back. I saw her being interviewed on Stephen Colbert and I almost wanted to watch it again, which is a very weird thing considering how I felt coming out of it. So I can unequivocally, without a doubt, say this is a good film. It's well-intentioned. It's beautifully made. It's a labor of love. There is no sloppiness, all of that. I'll grant it that. Is it a great film? That I don't know.
I mean, I can answer that. It's not a great film, but it's a very good, entertaining movie. I felt like you, Yasti, I felt like I was waiting for it to deliver its emotional punches. And I think for me, the problem lies in the script, which feels very old-fashioned. And it has because that it kind is. Of very... Yeah. But it has this kind of very daytime soap opera.
Old Hollywood kind of.
Yeah. And I felt that this movie missed an opportunity to modernize the story. Like not just modernize the setting, because I think the setting is extraordinarily well done here.
And we should talk about that as well. Yeah.
You know, Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga, and you know the songs, the soundtrack I think in this is very strong. I think especially the rock songs, I think when it goes to the poppy Gaga stuff, that doesn't work as well for me. But you know, the opening song, you know, I've got a Google Play Music subscription and I saw it in my recommended list today. Boom, hit that straight away. And I listened to it a couple of times. And I'm like, it's some really strong music in it. So I found the whole experience of watching the movie extraordinarily entertaining. But it fits, it's a little clunky. And Cooper, while I believed his struggling, you know, substance abuse, rock star type lifestyle very much, I struggled with the meteoric rise of the Lady Gaga character. And I think, again, it's an old fashioned story thing, but she goes from, you know, who am I? Can I sing? To you know, being like you know a pop diva in 5 minutes, and I didn't feel like the progress of time was adequately represented. So, it's a very like you yesterday. I find myself wanting to see this again because I found the whole movie very enjoyable to watch, and I think maybe it was the music numbers, maybe it was the direction.
Yeah,
but. It's not a great movie.
Yeah.
I agree with you both. So see, this was the one.
I knew Rush.
Was not my favorite movie. Look, I think the acting in this movie is just superb. However, as a whole, this comes across more like an episode of, remember VH1 used to play Behind the Music? It comes across more like a Behind the Music episode to me, which doesn't make it a bad movie. It just feels more like a ethereal music video than a film with a complete narrative. And I think the biggest contention for me is that the entire movie happens because Bradley Cooper turns up at a bar, a random bar where Gaga's singing. So it's too contrived.
All movies and it's are built, contrived.
I know, but this one seems very contrived because the whole movie rests on that one meeting. And then the scale of the movie in terms of time didn't make sense to me. I couldn't get, have we gone through years? Have we gone through months? Or is this all happening in a week? To your point, Joe, it's really the same point you made about the meteoric rise of Gaga. And I think we get to the meteoric rise of Gaga because that's where she's comfortable being. So is she a good actor? Certainly in this role, I think she was very convincing. But I think that's because I actually watched her documentary. I don't know if you saw it. It was from 2017. Netflix, yeah. And it was called Lady Gaga 5 Foot Two. And it was a documentary about her. And it was the most boring documentary I've ever seen in my life. So one no of the most boring. Gaga. Yeah, no love for Gaga. I think she does a really good job here.
I'm going to fight you on that, by the way, but let's talk about that in a minute.
But it didn't work for me. I like the music. I like the production. I love roughed up Bradley Cooper. It didn't work for me as a movie.
I think the plot, and the reason why this is the fourth incarnation, and every generation seems to be making it, is because the plot by itself is very effective. It is kind of watching this simultaneous shift in the fortunes of two people, right? There's this top of the world superstar musician who is on his way down. He's tumbling down because he's an alcoholic, he has substance abuse problems, he's kind of a little bit washed up over the hill, and his career is coming down. And while it's coming down simultaneously, this other no-name person, her career is taking off. And I think there's an excellent Indian version of this movie with Amitabh Bachchan and Jaya Bhadhuri, by the way, which is so beautiful and it's so sensitively done. And a major part of that, the conflict between the two main characters, and I think in the previous incarnations, has been that this person who has created the star starts feeling jealous of her.
Hmm.
And this movie kind of only plays that very peripherally initially, and that jealousy component is completely put aside for the whole substance abuse
It's one scene.
Issue, right. So I think it kind of, what is the strength of that plot is kind of lost here. So it kind of seemed like a bit of a lost opportunity. The other thing, I think, Bradley Cooper made a very, very conscious decision that the movie is at all times about these two people. So we don't see her meteoric rise because we never see the world reacting to either one of them. It's a series of, they go and play, at stadiums and so forth.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
But you don't actually see her being adored, or you don't see her in the news, or you don't see her. So it's kind of hard to find. And I think it's a very conscious choice. They just want to stick with these two people. And then there's this whole SNL piece, which really did not work. So I think their attempts to modernize it came off very clunky.
Yeah. Even the Grammys scene.
The Grammys scene was
awful. It was cringeworthy. I hated it.
The Grammys scene was really bad. And, we know what he's trying to do there. Like, maximize this person's downfall or his shaming, if you will. But it was just very clumsy. So I think all the attempts to modernize it, the SNL bit, the Grammys bit, it really didn't work. And I think the other thing which I didn't care for is, sorry, I'll give you guys a minute. But the other thing I didn't care for was the movie's kind of making the point that he starts resenting her because she loses her true self by becoming too artificial and packaged and kind of synth pop-ish.
Yes.
So there is an indictment that, when she's singing the serious songs, that she's a true artist, but that she's selling herself off or becoming which, nominally is true, but I think it's not always true, right? I mean, Lady Gaga herself is an example of somebody who has always been very plastic and manufactured, but she has managed to be relevant. And, there's a lot of pop which is very relevant, not often, but very often. So I kind of felt it was like a cheap shot. yeah. that they took that, you know, oh, now she's like, you know, singing, doing this music video. Therefore now, you know, she has kind of lost her way. So I didn't care.
For I remember that. That battle in music in the 90s where, you know, we had a lot of synthesized pop mm-hmm. and, you know, there was a big movement, especially in Britain with, you know, the Brit pop and the kind of the grunge bands who were like, you know, as soon as you bring a guitar into it, it's real. And right. this movie kind of plays with that too, right? Where
yeah, the music changes through the dance through the numbers. Movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like their chemistry.
Can we talk about Gaga's performance? Because yes. I had a real hard time with her performance Me here. Too. I think there's been a Me lot too. Of discussion that she's this great actress. But I couldn't help feel that at every point in time she was completely conscious of the camera. And the only reason, you know, the only thing that stopped us seeing that obviously was the fact that she didn't look into the thing, but you always felt that she was very I always felt that she was just, you know, overplaying.
Did you buy I didn't for a minute buy that she was a waitress. I did not. I mean, at every time I felt this is Lady Gaga in, you know,
and maybe her star is too big.
She is, and maybe that's the issue. She's too big by this point that she can. She did not slip into the role. At every time yep. I was watching her, I was like, I'm watching Lady Gaga play Ally.
Yeah.
Sure, whole movie. Sure. So, which I shouldn't hold. I just thought that she was just being herself, right, to be honest. Right. I mean, there was a lot of more bravado came once we hit, you right. know, her ascent. I thought that was just her, and that's why I kind of referenced the documentary, because there's not much difference. And that's why I said, well, can she act? Well, she's good in this role because I think she's just being herself.
I mean, 10 out of 10 for effort, but I just didn't buy it.
I don't think it's hailed. I don't think it deserves the...
Yeah, the adulation that she's getting.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it's because people thought that she would completely flump it. You know,
she's been in American Horror Story and got a Golden Globe or an Emmy or something, I think, for it.
But I think, you know, maybe there was a sense that, you know, she wasn't going to be... you know, good in the role. I'm not saying she's not good. It's just I didn't buy her.
Yeah.
And I think...
And maybe that's that my problem as much as their problem. It could be. But yeah, I didn't buy her either. And
Cooper, like from the moment he walked on stage...
He was amazing.
I lost the Bradley too. Cooper that we Correct. All know from the Hangover movies yeah. and everything else that he's famous for. I believed in this rock star. It felt very...
Yeah, and even the voice.
It felt very Jeff Bridges-like in some ways. Crazy Heart.
Yeah,
but, absolutely. But yeah, the voice and just, you know, the style and the mannerisms. I mean, I didn't see Bradley Cooper in it at all. There was just this character, Jackson Maine.
Yeah, I mean, a lot's been made about the fact that Gaga insisted on doing live music like they did for Les Mis a few years ago. Okay. So all the songs are apparently sung live. Okay. And recorded live. I mean, and you know, she's a great singer. And yeah, she's a great singer.
Like a million bucks. And she's not, there's no pop assistance. Very often she's singing just a cappella without any accompaniment, right. like entire songs. So, right. she, you know, all hats off to her. But that's hardly a surprise.
Yeah.
Gaga can sing. Who knew? But, you know, yeah, I mean, I did kind of enjoy, I think the first 45 minutes of the movie are pretty good, as contrived as it might be. I really enjoyed, for a very commercial, mainstream, love me everybody kind of movie, there is this whole passage when that night when they first meet, which is actually pretty off the mainstream, off
and
the grid.
Intimate.
And mm-hmm. intimate, you know, how they interact, and there's this beautiful scene outside a supermarket.
Convenience
store, which is really beautiful. It's beautifully realized. And also, you know, they've released that whole song when she sings at the first time at this big concert. That was real acting, because I could sense that she was holding herself back. She was horrified that, you know, she's never sung in a big stadium like this, and he's pulling her, and she cannot believe that he's singing the song that she has written. And then she somehow, you know, this is all wordless. She somehow summons the courage and she just goes for it. I believed all of that. Mm. But then subsequent to that, I did not.
Yeah, you know, well, so. It's funny because I wrote down, you know, I think I bought the chemistry between the two of them, and it did feel like, certainly for the first half that we were watching, a couple in love.
Right.
I think the problem is that it's too long. It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. The first time I looked at my watch, we were only halfway through. And I was thinking, okay, well, that's fine. But the last part of the movie really dragged for me.
Yeah.
So shall we sum this one up, or you have more to say?
I mean, I could talk about it for a while, but I think, you know, we've said the important things, and that's me jumping in to sum up. Annoyingly, as Yasti said at the beginning of this, I do find some fondness for it, but I think the soundtrack itself was very compelling, and I think a large part of that desire to see it again is, you know, to see the pop concert part of it again. There are some very well-written songs. They're quite powerfully emotional, and they're well-performed and acted as songs. So, how do I score this? An 8 seems too generous. A 7 seems too stingy. So, you know.
Is Joe prescribing the half?
Well, no. No. Seven we have half. Integers. Yes, don't no, do it. We don't do halves. There's a 10-point scale. That's enough for anything. I'm going to stick with a 7 and say it's a very good 7.
A 7 for me as well. I mean, I cannot fault Bradley Cooper. He's a little bit, there's a few scenes where it's a little overindulgent when he's directing himself, but be that as it may, I think we didn't talk about what a good looking film this is. I mean, this is really a beautiful, I mean, it's gorgeous to look at. It's been shot exquisitely well. All those, I don't know if it's CGI, but all apparently he went to the Glastonbury
Coachella.
He went to several film festivals and actually
music
festivals.
We know what you meant. Yes, yeah, we'll translate.
So those scenes are done. I mean, that's a very high level of difficulty doing that in real time. And it just looks very nice. It's there's a lot of lens flares. The camera is a little bit there's a lot of handheld work. I was feeling a little queasy for a while, but. It's really a very good looking movie, and there is nobody I wouldn't recommend this to, you know. But it does feel very old fashioned, like you said, in its gender politics and how it kind of deals with the whole issues. And it's a bit of a lost opportunity. I think it's a greater achievement for Bradley Cooper than it is for Lady Gaga. But, you know, I'm surprised at myself that it's kind of stayed with me as long as it has, 7 out of 10. I do hope to see it again sometime.
I have better things to do with my life. I was going to say it's a little bit melodramatic at times. Yes, I agree with you. It's not a bad movie. It's certainly not the, you know, Second Coming that I think people are hailing it to be. The star that's born in my mind is Bradley Cooper. I've always thought he's a really good actor. He's the one that shone for me in this. 5 out of 10.
Wow. Okay.
It was okay.
Yeah, you know.
I was kind of just over it.
Yeah. And
I wanted it to be more. I wanted Dave Chappelle to be more.
Yeah, what was Dave Chappelle even doing in the movie? I mean, what a waste.
I know he's not an actor.
I was cringing every time he came on the screen.
I know he's not an actor, but,
it was terrible.
For somebody who speaks from the heart so truthfully as Dave Chappelle.
It was mildly offensive, because it's like you bring in the black guy to impart wisdom. I don't know. There was something weird about that whole thing. I don't know.
I thought it was really weird.
And the number of times he said bro in like one sentence, I'm like, Dave Chappelle doesn't even talk like that. I mean, you know.
Which is fine. I mean, yeah, he was acting, but it felt like a gimmick. It felt like. And then was it just me? But I some of the dialogue sounded really muffled to me. I was really straining. Maybe it's a theater where we saw it.
Although it sounded quiet,
But like his brother, who's played by Sam Elliott, I was really straining. Maybe it was the way he was delivering his lines. I was really straining to understand what he was saying. And Sam Elliott is a great actor, but I don't know. Everybody seemed a little underutilized for a movie this long. So, because again, the choice is that it's always about Ali and Jackson. The whole time.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. And they're okay company. They're a good company. 7 out of 10.
You said that already.
I wouldn't nominate
it. counteracting my 5.
No, I'm not. No, not at all. I'm with you. I maybe we are reacting the way we are because we resent all the, you know, hype the movie's getting. But whatever. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how the world responds to this.
Yeah.
Moving on. Movie number 2 then is The Sisters Brothers. So am I telling you,
you
about the Sisters Brothers?
You are telling us okay. about that one, Joe.
Then I will tell you all about the Sisters Brothers, directed and written by Jacques Audiard. I think I said that right. Yes. Who directed a movie with Marianne Cotillard a few years ago, right?
Rust and Bone.
And yes, despite excellent. The fact that you've told me about that movie a million times, I still haven't gotten to watch
it.
It's
on Netflix.
It's in my queue, I believe. In fact, Netflix pick, Rust and Bone, because Yazdi keeps telling us about it.
And he's made a terrific movie called A Prophet, which is about
I remember we did see A Prophet.
In the prison, remember?
And both movies are French language movies.
Yes,
so
this
presumably
is his first English language movie, yeah.
This is an English language debut. So thank you for weighing in. The Sisters Brothers is based on a novel by Patrick DeWitt, and it's a reimagining of the cinematic Western as a dangerous, witty, and emotional cathartic exploration of what it means to be a man. It's 1851, and Charlie and Eli sisters are both brothers and assassins, boys to grown men in a savage and hostile world. They have blood on their hands, that of criminals and that of innocents, and they know no state of existence other than being gunmen. I'll stop there. That was the description straight from the Rotten Tomatoes page. The movie stars John C. Reilly, Joaquin Phoenix, Jake Gyllenhaal, Riz Ahmed, Rutger Hauer. Carol Kane is in this. Guys, what did you think of The Sisters Brothers?
So I've really been looking forward to this one for a long time, and especially because we didn't manage to see this at Toronto Film Festival, mm-hmm. although we did see Jake Gyllenhaal.
And John C. Reilly.
You were and Joaquin Phoenix.
And you were breathing the air that he was,
I was
breathing. You were so close to him.
Yes, that's right. Look, what an unusual modern Western of sorts. It didn't quite deliver on the promise, given the incredible cast, but I still really enjoyed it. I didn't quite know what I was watching half the time because I couldn't quite follow the story. But despite that, I just loved watching these four men on screen. I just loved it. I loved watching them. I don't know what I saw.
Yeah, unlike A Star is Born, this is unequivocally a film. This is a film. This is a film which is not shy. It is very particular. I mean, the history of American cinema probably is the history of the Western. I mean, there have been so many Western movies. And to bring something new, this is unlike any Western I've seen. And I, you know, next short of the horror, the Western is probably my least favorite genre. But within the conventions of the Western, this movie takes so many liberties. Like you, I never knew where this movie was going. I didn't even know who the good guys were, who the bad guys were. The good guys are pretty bad, and the bad guys are pretty good, right? The brothers are pretty nasty, and then the supposed villains, you know, they are actually, they believe they're doing something philosophically right. The whole interaction between the four men, there's all these undertones. There's this weird shootout in this town, and the movie, what I love about the movie is it's full of specifics. It's full of specifics, little things. There is a scene about, which starts of the movie, which is just brilliantly realized, about gunfire in the middle of the night. And all you see is the gunfire. It's so beautiful. There is a whole bit about a red scarf that is worn. And why is the reason why he's attached to the red scarf? There's this beautiful scene about a horse who is injured and infected. It's full of like breathtaking things which are embedded in my mind. Like you, I love this movie. I'm glad that it exists. I'm glad that somebody thought of this and realized it as strange and ponderous and awkward and unwieldy as it is. It's a thing
and
of
sometimes
beauty.
It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense.
It's like, what just happened there?
But it's
fine.
It's so not what you expect. It's a thing of beauty. Go on.
Yeah, no, the specifics things is great. And the only other one I'd add to that list, Yazdi, is the toothbrush.
Oh, the
yes!
Toothbrush. Goodness, yes.
That
toothbrush.
Was
and,
great.
And the reason that we're all reacting to that, this movie, it's not a spoiler, but this movie is set in a time when toothbrushes weren't a common thing to do. So it depicts,
right,
almost as a throwaway detail, the John C. Reilly character being intrigued by this new thing that somebody sells him, and then how he goes about using it. And the wonderful thing about that scene is we are also conditioned to use toothbrushes in the way that our family taught us to. But if no one had ever shown you how to use a toothbrush, you may well just use the you brush your teeth in the way that the John C. Reilly character did in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's those little details, Yasti, that, yeah. that made this movie such a wonderful experience to spend a couple of hours in, because it felt very authentic. It had some comedic mm-hmm. moments to it, and it felt
it's genuinely funny, you know, at times,
people, I'm sure, I haven't read any of the press about this movie, but I'm sure there are comparisons made to Coen Brothers, True Grit, that mm-hmm. kind of but it's not that at all, and it's not trying to be bizarre. It's trying, in my mind, to give us a sense of what it was really like. I don't know if that's true to the source material or not, but I really felt as if you know, this is a gritty Western world that feels, you know, the verisimilitude of it, you mm-hmm. know, is there in every moment. The fact that the guns, you know, don't bang like modern guns, you know, they're like, they're like, woof, right. you know, because it's gunpowder, it's very primitive. These aren't, you know, the modern revolvers. So everything about this movie just felt authentic, and the characters and the relationship between the brothers and the interplay of them and this you know, kingpin for whom they work. I mean, everything just fit together wonderfully. So I found myself liking this movie a lot more having left it. I think, you know, as I came out, it was you know, that was well realized, but I keep thinking about these little moments. It's yeah. these little things.
And just, you reminded me how they show the difference in stature and sophistication with the same tool of that toothbrush when Jake Gyllenhaal's brushing his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's so right, it's yeah. a really nice little tool, and it's funny. There are some really funny moments. And then the thing that really impressed me about this movie was John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
Look, he, to me, is someone who's kind of often forgotten about,
he's just there,
right?
Yeah, in movie after movie after movie, yeah. He's
but
just there,
here,
yeah.
he just shines. There's this beautiful emotion that he brings that's understated, that's kind of present in every scene he's in. And just that exchange of the scarf, right? And when he's in a room with a prostitute, and just how he uses her is not typical.
Right.
And even like Riz Ahmed, I mean, he's got a strange role in this movie, but it just works. And
I mean,
it's such a good movie.
I mean, at its heart, it's about this gold prospector, right?
Yeah.
And this duo of assassins who have been sent to kind of kill him. That's all.
Well,
it is.
Capture the secret.
Or
yeah.
Capture the secret, you know, for how to harvest gold. That's it. That's the movie in a nutshell, but all of the characters have been so beautifully realized, right? I mean, just think about the casting here, right? Any other director, any other Hollywood studio would insist that Jake Gyllenhaal play one of the sisters' brothers. And yet Jake Gyllenhaal plays this really throwaway character. It's very specific. It's very odd. And, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal likes to play off-kilter, odd stuff, and he's aces in it. And, you know, I was going to say no film studio will allow John C. Reilly to kind of lead a movie, although he's done his share of movies with Will Ferrell, for example. But he's so good here. He's kind of the heart and soul of
yeah.
this movie. And Joaquin Phoenix is not annoying or angry for once.
Yes, it's the first movie in a long time where I haven't been annoyed by him.
Or he doesn't play an angry character who hates the world. You know, he's just
I
a normal person.
I don't know
person.
About that.
No?
It's a little bit overacted, but it's not as much as normal.
Well, the character has his issues.
Right.
And they're pretty big ones.
Right.
But yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. He's not...
And you know, this, again, it didn't feel to me like somebody has recreated this somewhere. It felt like it was of that time, right? So
yes.
the production design is impeccable.
And the color and the grain, yeah.
And there's this whole scene where they arrive in ostensibly what was downtown San Francisco in 1851. And that's
I
so
love
beautifully
that. Yeah.
realized, that whole, you know, whole scene. And I was also amazed at, maybe I'm seeing too much into it, but they were like these, it's basically about four men. Okay, there are no women in this movie, at least in any large roles. but there was some weird undertones. Was there something going on between Jake Gyllenhaal and Riz Ahmed? I kind of was like, there was something.
I think it was like an admiration.
I felt a little bit something more than that. Or a spiritual
awakening. I don't know.
More like a sexual awakening. But
I didn't get that.
Okay. But it was interesting because there's so much to think about. Like, yeah. I can just take any half an hour of this movie and kind of dissect it scene by scene by scene and enjoy it.
And I love the name. The Sisters Brothers. Yeah. It's a little bit precious.
It is quite precious.
But I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, again, I think there's so many little... you nailed it with that point about the specifics. I mean, even the gold prospecting scene where, you know, I now understand... People always joke about OSHA regulations, but I now understand why we have them. Because, back in the day... the kind of things that people could inadvertently get themselves into simply by, entrusting somebody who really didn't know what they were doing. I mean, I don't want to get into, it's not spoilers, but the movie really understands what it was like. The distance between the cities,
it's 2 days away. Everything is in days horseback.
Yeah,
because that's how it was. And you get the sense that they're traversing this open country. And it takes time to get from place to place. The sense of time is genuinely there. I mean, I don't know the distances in terms of modern, comparisons. It'll probably all be half an hour's drive, but... Really, really good stuff.
And I also like that the movie, all Westerns kind of ultimately land up in a place where there's this epic showdown between the good guys and the bad guys. And in this movie, the bad guys are dispensed off a particular way, and it's not necessarily epic, but it's so memorable. It's so visually disturbing. I mean, it almost moves into horror territory for a little bit.
Correct.
And it's so smart because... It doesn't play necessarily by those conventions, but still it is, unequivocally very memorable. It's a proper showdown.
And the spider in John C. Reilly's mouth is just...
I hope that was CGI. I know. I don't think it was.
I know. It's worth seeing it just for that.
Yeah.
Okay, I can sum up. I love this movie. 8 out of 10.
I adore this movie. 8 out of 10. It's the reason why we go to movies to find gems like this. And I think people should give this a chance and not let the slightly unusual name or the fact that it's made by a French director, don't let that get you down. Go seek this movie out. You'll be up for an unpredictable joyride.
Especially if you think you don't like Westerns, because I don't think
I don't think any of us do, right?
Does itself any favors by being in that genre in the sense of there are people who simply don't, won't go to see those movies, but this is terrific stuff. My 8 out of 10, given that Star Out of Born got 7, it feels savagely brutal here because the movie is so, so carefully done. But 8 out of 10 it is, and it's totally again. I would recommend this to anyone who likes film.
It's going to be on my list of best movies of the year, easily.
Well, you don't know what else is coming.
Well, what's coming next on the podcast is Bad Times at the El Royale. So, Yasti, will you tell us about Bad Times at the El Royale?
I will. So, Drew Goddard, who kind of burst onto the scene a few years ago by a movie which is really quite celebrated by the hipster lot. And I thought it was pretty good, but not as good as everybody else thinks it is, which is The Cabin in the Woods. He returns. Joe, you're a big...
I like that one a lot, yeah. I mean, I think it was just... It was the way that it played with convention that gave that movie, I think, this...
Right, like, it's very meta
type, But yes, very good.
So he returns to make his second movie, which is Bad Times at El Royale. And essentially, this movie is reminiscent or maybe is an homage to a very Tarantino-esque universe, set in a very Tarantino-esque premise. In fact, there are parts of this movie which kind of reminded me of The Hateful Eight, but we can talk about that some more. But essentially, it's a story about seven strangers, each of whom have a secret to bury. They meet at Lake Tahoe's El Royale, which is a rundown hotel with a dark past. And over the course of one fateful night, everyone has a last shot at redemption before everything goes to hell. And boy, does everything go to hell. This is the IMDb review. And the eight characters are played by Dakota Johnson, John Hamm, and Chris Hemsworth is here, as is Cynthia Olivio. Jeff Bridges is here. Nick Offerman is here. Xavier Dolan is here, as are many, many other actors. The movie, the sole writing credit is by Drew Goddard. So he wrote this original material. And this movie sounds like a box of fun. What did you guys think? That's the expectations with which I went in to see it.
I'm going to say it right from the outset. I love this movie. So very much like Hotel Artemis that came out earlier in the summer, this feels like it came out of nowhere, mm-hmm. and it felt like it had the same texture and feel. What a great film, noir-esque movie that is just so different and fun and crazy. I love this movie.
Joe? I did not love this movie. but I didn't hate it either. I mean, so... You mentioned Tarantino, Yessi. This movie so obviously plays by the conventions that Tarantino uses. They just felt less surprising here. So, you know, it has that kind of mechanic where, you know, we see something and then we see it again later on with different information from perhaps a different perspective. We get more information about each character revealed. It even has like the title cards that Tarantino is so fond of using, you know, especially, you know, Pulp Fiction type thing. And it has the very bizarre, very extreme, larger than life type characters, yeah, with, you know, dialogue and speeches. So it just felt very derivative to me. That's not to say I didn't enjoy the movie. It kept me on my toes. But it felt very unoriginal and I couldn't escape this sense of, oh, look, somebody's doing the Tarantino thing again. And maybe that's a little unfair, but it just felt like Tarantino does so well, you know, places a little ticking time bombs everywhere. But I never felt any of them explode, right? Yeah. So it was very enjoyable. I'm beating on it, perhaps, because Rashmi is saying it's so brilliant. But Yesti, moderate.
Rashmi is right.
Yay!
Okay.
It is. I think it's qualifiably brilliant. I think it's very pulpy. There's a particular kind of genre which is larger than life. There was a movie with Nicolas Cage. I think it was called, it's in a hotel room somewhere. And I don't remember the name of the movie, but it was a very similar premise where different characters come to this hotel room and everybody has kind of a secret buried. But I just like the fact that even more so than Cabin in the Woods, there's such a great sense of control over this material, right? Nothing in the movie seemed tentative to me. Everything, it seemed like this director has complete control over the material. And it, of course, you know, it has its reveals and it has its, you know,
title cards.
I love the title cards.
I love the title cards.
I love the title cards. But I think I
can only accept them from Tarantino now.
But anyway.
Dunkirk, Joe, may I remind you? they were
Joe's embarrassed now. He forgot that.
But anyway,
No, they weren't the same thing at all. But carry on.
You're right. They were not title cards.
They were title cards.
No, they were floating titles.
They were floating.
I Nolan guess. Does it right. Come on.
But anyway, I loved how there's this whole running gag in the movie, and it's not a spoiler at all, about how the hotel sits exactly
between Nevada and California.
So the border between the two states bisects the hotel into two halves. And it seems initially like a gimmick, but he milks it for all
it's
that it's worth.
Great.
It's great. It keeps coming back again and again and again. And I enjoyed every part of it. There is a great shootout which happens. Jeff Bridges, God bless him. He's so good here. And I like that it has a very old-fashioned sense of morality. I mean, this gets very violent and many people drop to the floor. But the only two characters who kind of walk away from it are not necessarily the characters you expect to walk away from.
Correct.
It. So, and I like that it has a very old-fashioned sense of, you know, people getting their just rewards. And I enjoyed that. I didn't know what was going on with the Dakota Johnson character. I didn't understand what was going on with her sister. And it's all revealed very nicely. So I guess it's a question of, do you buy it or not? I just completely bought it and I was thrilled. And I just kind of, I love it when I settle back in my chair saying, aha, I'm here for a ride. I'm in good hands.
Yeah.
You know, my next 2 hours are going to be blissful.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
Yeah. I love movies where no one's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And surprising things happen and people die when you don't expect it, because then you're like, ah, this is really interesting now, right? The star who you think will be standing at the end of the movie isn't the star who's standing at the end of the movie. And that just makes it really exciting and unpredictable. And I love the sense of the production was amazing. I love the production. So it really gave me this sense of time and place. And then this beautiful soundtrack that's generated by singing a cappella. So, and each person's story is so well realized. And I love that many of the people who are cast are playing against type.
Yeah.
So I love, was it Liam Hemsworth?
Chris Hemsworth.
Chris Hemsworth. he's hilarious. Like
he's totally riffing on his own self-parody. Right?
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, again, I love Chris Hemsworth when he's not playing the pretty boy. When he's doing some real acting, and I'm starting to think that there's more to him than meets the eye. And I remember when we saw The Dressmaker, and he was great in The Dressmaker. He's
funny.
So memorable in this.
Except that we've seen all these characters before.
I don't know.
I felt that, you know, the young girl. You know, I feel
sure,
like we've
she was
seen
very,
like the Killer Joe.
Yeah,
type.
She was. I was going to say.
Okay. So again, I felt like everything here has been done before. It didn't bring anything fresh to the table.
Sure.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but because I think
maybe you went in the future and saw this movie and then you came back.
But that's the thing. It felt like I had, and so I got the sense for who was going to prevail quite early on.
Really?
Again, I think.
I didn't.
Yeah, I. Well, again, we can't get into it too much online here. We're always very conscious of spoilers, but the plot twists just weren't very surprising to me. And yeah, I know. I was like, okay, yeah,
it's full
whatever.
Of plot twists.
And it's intended to be, and it's intended to be like, oh, and so I wasn't expecting this. So, you know, I feel like this kind of stuff has been done before. It didn't create enormous tension for me. Mm. And again, I think if you don't feel the tension, if you tend to view the characters as caricatures, which I kind of felt they were, the Chris Hemsworth character is terrific, but again, we've seen the psycho cult leader done before and better, and so
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I mean,
and
not
I
as
like,
tongue in cheek. He was very tongue in cheek,
and on and just on the right side that it almost makes you laugh uncomfortably. Right, you're laughing, and I always said these things. You generally laugh at the things that represent the truth, and so
he wasn't frightening enough for me.
See, I think he was frightening because he was so caricaturish.
And charismatic.
I know what they were aiming for, but it didn't click for me. Because
I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
This is the Miles, the guy who's at the hotel.
Right.
Lewis Pullman, who was in Lean on Pete earlier this year.
Oh, yeah.
So good to see him again.
Yes.
He was terrific.
And Cynthia Erivo. So, we both movies, Star is Born, as well as Bad Times at El Royale, have extended periods of time where a female character is singing a song, entire songs.
Yeah.
And Gaga sings entire, like full songs in the movie. And in this movie, Cynthia Erivo, who is a Broadway star, and she's in this movie, she sings entire songs. And
beautiful she's voice.
Gorgeous. And I mean, the voice is gorgeous. And, it, you know, her song plays out through very critical scenes. And it's so beautifully blended in. They really are, Drew Goddard knew how to kind of harness her talent to the good of the movie. And there are three or four songs she sings. And yeah. It's quite incredible. I loved, there's, you know, the whole architecture of the hotel, and there's this whole, I don't know, it's a spoiler.
It's a spoiler, so I won't go to it,
but
yeah,
there's this whole premise about there's something weird about the architecture. I loved how that played out, and it was genuinely funny. And I liked how certain scenes will play out a particular way. And then later on, you will see another character experiencing those same scenes from a different perspective.
And that's what was different. Right. I think that to me was the add-on to Tarantino, right? So normally you see in a Tarantino film, you're right, Joe, you see the scene and then you see it from another point of view. But the way it was done to me was definitely sort of taking that concept and making it better.
Yeah, and I loved the look of it. I felt again like I was in that time and place.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so much fun.
It could be a stage play.
Yeah.
At times I was thinking, gosh, you know, this could be a great stage play.
Yeah.
Look, I can sum this one up. I love this movie. This had, it was just amazing. It was so different for me. And I love Tarantino and I love Coen Brothers. And it was like someone took both of those and blended them all up. This is a 9 out of 10 for me. I would definitely stay at this one again.
Yeah, an 8.5 out of 10 for me, the highest score on this podcast.
No, Hobbs.
I know, then I'll back down to 8.
So it's the same as...
Stop it. I know what you're doing. Yeah, same as...
Sisters Brothers,
yeah. I love them both. They're equally. Both,
yeah.
They're both exceptional. It's like jazz, the whole movie, I think. It's perfectly orchestrated, but it looks like it's improvised. It's so confidently, like you said earlier, and there's always control over the material, even where crazy things are happening. And I love Jeff Bridges, and we don't see enough of him. And it's worth seeing this movie just for his line readings. I mean, every piece of dialogue that he says,
even John Hamm, even Dakota, everyone
Dakota
is so
Johnson
good.
Dakota Johnson is damn good here.
So good.
You know, it's like a roller coaster. Sure, you've been on a roller coaster before, but what a great ride. I would recommend this to everyone. Maybe not this very squeamish because it does get pretty grisly, but I loved it.
And I liked it, didn't love it. It's not as subversive and clever as Cabin in the Woods, you know. I feel like instead of doing a play on genre here, he's gone for a genre. Yeah, and that genre is the Tarantino genre. And that is a genre that's very, very clearly owned by somebody. So this felt very derivative and slightly plodding as a result for me. You know, I felt like it was watching... a well-made, well-constructed copy of something else. And that's why it never really... And again, the opportunity that he had to do something marvelous with this, like he did with Cabin in the Woods, by flipping your expectation. You know, this movie isn't what you think it is. He didn't do here. So again, maybe it's expectations. Maybe it's the mood I was in the day. It just didn't work quite as well for me as you. That said, it's not a horrible movie. It is fabulously entertaining, and I'm going to give it a 6. I like The Star Is Born better. That's the honest answer. It's crazy, but I did. And on that note, with Jaws agasp on the floor and me probably going to get a kicking after we turn off the podcast from the two of
it's
you.
It's running 91%, I think.
No, I don't think it is. I think it's you're mixing it up, I think, with Sisters Brothers.
Maybe,
Sisters Brothers is 86%. Ironically, A Star Is Born is 91. Oh. So Anyway, let's wrap up the podcast. We've been babbling on for an hour. Hopefully you're still with us. And thank you for listening if you are. Until our next podcast. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well. And can I just say, it will make a great double feature with Hotel Artemis.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. They're in that same universe.
They're in the same universe, yeah.
Yeah.
Another movie that I didn't love like you guys. Too bad. What's wrong with me?
Joe, what are we going to do with you?
I know. It's terrible.
No, that's why it's great.
Yeah.
That's why we love the movies.
And these things are made for me. It's too bad. All right. Bye-bye.